Yeah, it's been an interesting one. Let me hold that.
Okay, we're golden. Okay, golden, right? Goldens?
Yeah.
Golden. There we go. So last week that we are going to talk about prayer, as I've shared with you guys, I think everybody's mostly been here, right? This is a book by Tyler Staton called Praying Like Monks, Living Like Fools. This is really where I'm getting the majority of this information from. It has been a very meaningful book to us. And I hopefully you've enjoyed it as well. Just to kind of start again, right? He kind of makes this statement at the very beginning that to me kind of summarizes the book, right? That prayer invites you to learn to listen to God before speaking, to ask like a child in your old age, to scream your questions in an angry tirade, to undress yourself in a vulnerable confession, and to be loved, completely and totally loved in spite of everything. So this week, last two chapters, the first one is called Ask, Seek, and Knock. And the second one is Rebellious Fidelity. And when he kind of subtitle of Ask, Seek, and Knock is A Silence and Persistence. So we'll get into those in just a couple of minutes. Can someone read the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 7, 7 through 8 for me?
Okay, I finally have it.
Thank you.
I have very thin pages.
You're doing great. So what's very interesting is Staton goes down this path of prayer is a journey. It starts with a need and ends in a relationship. And I want to read a paragraph to you where he says, when he's referring to ask, seek, and knock. In these three verbs, Jesus is naming the trail markers on the common prayer journey. A path tread by men and women of faith, searching all the way back to the beginning. Prayer is a journey that starts with a need and ends in relationship. When we are born into this world, our first words are unintelligible cries of pain and need. Babies weep and wail before they learn coherent speech, before they learn relational trust in the mother and father who brought them into this world. Likewise, prayer is a primal language, instinctively emerging from us in the face of pain and suffering. Need first drives us to our knees, but relationship keeps us there. That's what Jesus was getting at, the deeper invitation hidden in three simple verbs: ask, seek, and knock. So when we look at these three, you think about it, is ask, it refers to requests that bring us to prayer, right? What are the things in our lives that bring us to prayer? Whether it's some sort of a diagnosis, a breakup, a car accident, a financial storm, job challenges, whatever, right? Health. Any of those things. Seek actually often refers to God himself. So we seek God through stories of the kings and judges, the poetry of the Psalms, the cries of the prophets. And then knock, what's quite interesting is the destination of the prayer journey that begins in need. And he refers to this as a table fellowship, because if you think about it, right, you knock at the door, I will come, right? I will come and have fellowship with you. And we think about it, prayer in any form by anybody is God's invitation to pull up a chair to the table and enjoy restful, intimate, unbroken conversation with the triune God. Or as Jesus succinctly said it, knock and the door will be open to you. He brings this analogy in of a meal, right? Coming together. Think about in the first century, sharing a meal with somebody was very different, right? That was a big, big deal. And that was the ultimate, if you will, of maybe not intimacy, but relationship, coming together, breaking bread. So to me, that was another area that I thought, okay, this is an area where we see that Jesus is wanting to come alongside us, right? Wanting that relationship. So what I find interesting is that, and you guys know I'm not a Greek scholar, so I'm kind of taking this from what Statton says, but he refers to the Greek verb tense that is in this passage, ask, seek, and knock, is a verb tense that we actually don't have in English. And it implies not a single action, but an ongoing action. So one that takes place in the present and in the future. And he brings this literal translation out. Keep on asking and you will receive. Keep on seeking and you will find. Keep on knocking and the door will be opened to you. Do you want to read? Because I think you just turned there.
I did. This is probably one of my favorite passages.
Oh, well, good. Even more reason for you to read.
Also a widow in that city who kept coming to him and saying, give me justice against my adversary. For a while he refused, but later on he said to himself, though I neither fear God nor have regard for people, yet because this widow keeps on bothering me, I will give her justice, or in the end she will wear me out by the unending pleas. And the Lord said, listen to what the unrighteous judge says. Won't God give justice to his chosen ones, cry out to him day and night? Will he delay long to help them? I tell you, he will give them justice speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?
Interesting, right? I hadn't thought about this parable in a long time. I'm sure I've read it a few times, but it wasn't something that jumps to mind. And it's a parable to his disciples, right? So he's basically telling them specifically, here's a parable to apply to your prayer life, which is all about persistence. And let's face it, I don't know about you, but I get worn down, right? God, why am I still going through this, right? Why is this occurring? Why aren't you, bringing salvation here? Why aren't you doing this here? And it's very easy to do that, right? Because once again, we're going to the Lord with ideas in our head that we want changed, right? Kind of trying to change that river that we talked about last week. I like this quote. Eugene Peterson writes, prayer is not begging God to do something for us that he doesn't know about, or begging God to do something for us that he is reluctant to do, or begging God to do something that he hasn't any time for. In prayer, we persistently, faithfully, trustingly come before God, submitting ourselves to his sovereignty, confident that he is acting right now on our behalf. Let me read a section to you that I thought spoke. Statton goes on, where does this confidence come from? From the assurance that we are his chosen ones. As Jesus names us in the same breath, what's God up to right now? He's weaving history into a redemptive, good future for his chosen ones. That's you, me, and all who call Jesus Lord. So I think the message, right, is there's this element of persistence that we have this opportunity to re-engage with God through prayer, right? We've talked about that, opening up those lines of communication. But we have to remember that once again, the prayer is about the relationship and identifying that relationship with the Lord. And Jesus even goes that far to say, be persistent, continue. You're demonstrating that relationship. You're demonstrating that trust and that love of God by getting on your knees and maybe praying the same dadgum thing every day. That's what he wants. He then goes on, which I never really thought about this one. This was interesting to me. Where do our prayers go? Revelation 5:8. God is collecting our prayers like a grandmother collects for a scrapbook. Kim, you're going there. Can you read Revelation 5:8 for me? I know. You set yourself up. So he's collecting these prayers, right? Okay, Kim, go to 8:3-5 since you're right there, please. 8:3-5, yeah.
And another angel came and stood at the altar, holding a golden censer, and much incense was given to him, that he might add it to the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints went up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer, and he filled it with the fire of the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there followed peals of thunder, and sounds and flashes of lightning, and an earthquake.
Was that 8:3-5?
Oh, sorry. Yes, that was.
Was it? Okay, just checking. Right? I get my translation talked about God tipping the bowl, so that's why I wasn't sure. Anyway, we're all good, guys, right? The point being is God is collecting these prayers, and then at the appropriate time, he's actually praying these out onto the earth, right, as we come to the end. And there's some comfort with that, knowing, I think, right, from that perspective, that all of our prayers are heard by God, and they're being collected. Statton goes on to say, the renewal of the world, heaven and earth restored as one, begins with God pouring out all the prayers of his children like a purifying fire with one great resounding yes. Every prayer in the end is an answered prayer. Some are still awaiting that yes, but it's coming. That's the kind of judge we are dealing with. Can somebody turn to Psalm 126 for me? I knew you would.
Psalm 126:5. Those who sow with tears will reap with songs of joy.
So not only is he collecting the prayers, he's collecting our tears. He's collecting every tear, and he'll redeem every tear. He's not merely bottling up our tears. He also promises that when they touch the earth, they will bring renewal. I found this very comforting for me. I think one of the things we have to think about and put out on the table is not all of our prayers are answered the way we want them to be answered. And maybe they're not ever answered no matter what. I don't know. But obviously, God promises that he hears our prayers, he's storing those prayers and our tears, and he's going to pour those out at the end. What is that going to look like? No idea, right? But to me, there's a comfort element there. And I think we go on and think about it is that we then choose trust, right? Because Jesus reveals a God who is offensively human in contrast to any other world religion, a God who knows the overwhelming nature of suffering in a fallen world. Think about it. Jesus was here on earth, experienced pretty much everything we've experienced, suffered the ultimate sacrifice, and he was God incarnate. to me, that there's an element there of knowing that God's been through everything I'm going through. That every temptation, every challenge, every issue, it kind of makes you rethink about the challenges you have, or at least for me. Stanton goes on to say, will the pain, or actually this came from, no, that's it. Will the pain, suffering, and needs that intrude on our own stories harden our hearts, or will they soften our souls? We have a choice, right? We can get mad. We can get frustrated. We get hardened when God doesn't answer our prayers. There's an option. How does that very pain that is eating us alive become, I think that's supposed to be an agenda of deep transformation? We have to invite God, the very one who broke our trust, into the muck with us. We invite the one we are labeling perpetrator to be our healer. It's the most courageous of all choices. And I think when we are in times of doubt, we need to remember that our trust and faith is in a Savior Christ who came for that very reason, to take on that pain and that suffering. And that doesn't mean our lives are going to be perfect. We all know that, right? We've all been around this block a few times. But there's an element there. Yes, Crystal?
Do you trust your umbrella? Which umbrella? Well, to protect you from the rain, right? Like, isn't prayer kind of like an umbrella? It doesn't change the weather or the atmosphere, but it changes your experience.
Okay. I haven't thought about it that way.
I like that because I don't like to get wet.
So you don't like to get wet? Terry's all in on the umbrella analogy. So... Well, I was going to say, right? Depends on, right, how windy it is. Yeah, right. So, exactly. Okay, so that's kind of the silence and persistence topic. Let's jump over real quick into this, what he calls rebellious fidelity and unceasing prayer. And the idea behind this is, once again, we've been talking a little bit about this as we've gone along over the last several weeks about prayer and how prayer is very much tied to demonstrating our love for the Lord. And he uses this term fidelity, and Webster, or one of the dictionaries, basically says fidelity is faithfulness to a person, a cause, or belief demonstrated by continuing loyalty and support. And so if you think about it, if prayer is about relationship, that means fidelity is the only container with which it can truly flourish, right? You've got to have that loyalty to continue to go back to the Lord and that love for that, right? That fidelity. Nouwen writes, prayer is the act by which we divest ourselves of all false belongings and become free to belong to God and God alone. Let me read another section for you. Before prayer is about prayer or outcomes or heavenly armies and righteous uprising, it's actually about love. It's the way we freely choose the God who freely chose us first. The way we express ourselves to the God who, in spite of everything, delights in us. The way we receive from the God who has endless stamina to offer himself to a bunch of people who prefer self-sufficiency, tight jaws, and clenched fists.
What page is that on?
That is on page 191. Remember when we were talking about prayer posture at the very beginning, and we were talking about silence and that posture element, and Cindy even brought up she likes to sit and let go, right? It's that physical action of letting go of those clenched fists, because this is control. This is what we want, or we think we want.
But what I said is I keep closing them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, yeah, right? But that's human nature, right? We want to control it. We want I mean, going back to the river comment, right? We want to change the river's direction. We want to fight the river. Anyway, so think about that from a fidelity perspective in this love, that it's that relationship, the love, and let go. And that's hard. Boy, that's hard. Then we go on into a daily prayer rhythm, right? And he says, daily prayer rhythm is about fidelity. It has absolutely everything to do with love and absolutely nothing to do with legalism. Jesus' personal discipline was always about freedom and life. So it's very interesting for us, and this is bright me, right? I've told you all this, right? I'm a task guy. I like to get things done. And it's very easy to let the task be the motivating factor. And what he's trying to say here is, guys, if we've got this love and desire for this relationship, then we should want to pray. It should be the motivating factor to pray, right? It's the mimicking of Jesus. He says, commitments... This is David Brooks. Commitments, not feelings, are how we show our love. David Brooks, who's a New York Times author, blah, 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 he defines commitment as falling in love with something or someone and then building a structure of behavior around it for those moments when love falters. So, once again, right? The love is driving the action. The action is not driving the love. You follow me? That's the difference. Yes, Crystal.
I think I see this more with sports. Like, I think I see people go, oh, my favorite team's playing, and then they clear their calendar. It's not that they clear their calendar because they are like, I need to watch football. It's like, that's my favorite team. That's the one I'm interested in. And then they act on that love, right? But if you really had a relationship where you're like, look, everything around me is failing and you are the only thing that brings me comfort, I don't care what happens in your life, you would be like, all right, excuse me, I have to be here, right? Mm. So I don't know, I just see it around sports more than I see it around prayer, but
okay.
Well, sports is a good analogy too, because that commitment to a team that you like is not dependent on how good they are that year.
Right. Your fair weather.
That's right. That's right.
No, yeah. Anyways.
But this year, right? Everybody's a Texas Ranger fan. But the last few years, who? When do the Cowboys play again? He goes on to say, a daily prayer rhythm is a structure to support our deepest desires, even when our feelings and emotions betray us. That's another side of this. You know, we've been doing this class now for, what, a year and a half, give or take? Maybe a year and a few months. And we're reading liturgies on a regular basis. And one of the things that we recognize as a leadership is sometimes the liturgies are a great way for us to keep engaged with the Lord. And you think about it, even when we don't know what else to do, right? Some of us may be in such dire need that we don't even know what to pray to God anymore. And sometimes the liturgies are a nice way to provide that structure and that element when you're struggling to even come up with what are the right words, or you're angry, or you're depressed, or whatever it might be. But the daily prayer rhythm and where he's going with this is thinking about that as a structure that you can use going forward. Last paragraph I'll read. What anchors your day right now? Possibly your workday demands, the buzz of notifications on your phone, or your email inbox. Your next meal, or the number of passing hours till the weekend. The days marked off until your time of travel begins. Something sets the daily rhythm of your life. Something marks the passage of time. Whatever that something is, you owe it to yourself to think hard about these questions. Is it making me whole? Does it love me or want to control me? Is it concerned for my deepest well-being, or is it trying to sell me something? Is it shaping me into the best version of myself, or is it frothing up my selfishness? Is it leaving me alive, or is it leaving me exhausted? Because whatever is at the center defines you and forms you into its image. Yowza. That was convicting, wasn't it? Okay, so let's talk about practice sessions. And as I've shared with you all, right, at the end of each chapter, he likes to give very tactical approaches. And so on a persistence perspective, he makes a very good point of listen. Well, first and foremost, share God your disappointment, right? Tell him what you're disappointed in. And then he says, listen for the question. What is at the root of your disappointment? Right? So somewhere beneath those circumstances, there's a wake of your disappointment, and that lives with that question. And then once you find that question, then you invite God in to that question, whatever that might be, right? And that's a very personal thing, right? And the disappointments can be wide range across the board. But at the end of the day, there's an element there. What is that root cause, as I would say? On the daily prayer rhythm, he recommends kind of looking at it from a three-pronged perspective, right? Starting the morning with the Lord's Prayer. He actually talks about having his Bible open on his alarm clock to the Lord's Prayer. And so he just immediately, the very first thing he opens up and does is read the Lord's Prayer. Then he uses midday for praying for the lost. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And then evening, gratitude. He actually has gone so far as created a daily prayer rhythm app. It's called the Inner Room app. I did download it. I do have it to go off at 12:15 in the afternoon because that's kind of where I don't really pray much. I have to admit it's been a struggle because it pops up right in the middle of stuff and it's so easy to just kind of move on, right? So it's not easy. It's not easy, but those are some areas, and you can, if you're interested, you can actually, there was a QR code, but I couldn't get it on the PowerPoint, but there you can go to his website, and there's a way to download it if you're interested. So, being our last one, I thought I'd just do a quick recap on the five, well, really 10 areas that he identifies from a practice perspective, and we're not going to have time to break up into groups. But I just thought I'd run through these very quickly. And if anybody has any questions or we want to talk about it, yell, right? So the first one was the prayer posture and be still. This is the one thinking about and being, well, really what I look at it is being silent before the Lord, listening to God rather than having it a one-directional conversation, right? Remember, we set our cell phones for 2 minutes or 4 minutes, right? So that we wouldn't look at them to see what time, you know, how much longer, and just to listen to God. The second one was around adoration and confession, right? Going down that path of confessing and finding those areas in your life. We talk about that in this class, right? The nooks and crannies of your life that you're still trying to give over to the Lord. We then talked about intercession and petition. Right? How do we intercede? What does it look like? Last week, we talked about middle voice and praying for the lost. Dave grabbed onto the analogy, that middle voice of coming alongside God, like the Mississippi River, right? When you swim in the Mississippi River, which we were later told you don't actually do that, but you don't fight that current, right? That current does not get changed. You don't fight that current. You come alongside it and go with the current. And then last but not least, persistence and daily prayer rhythm. Any of these, anybody has any questions, want to explore for a couple of minutes? Or we can just end a couple of minutes early. It's all good with me. I got to talk another 45 minutes. So, hey,
sorry.
It's all right.
I thought this was a closet.
Oh.
You're coming out of the closet.
Okay. Anybody? All right. Okay.
I do have a question.
Okay.
Chuck and I were just talking about this yesterday. And he was asking me if I'd ever had like a prayer journal or a place where I tracked prayer. And I feel like I have before and it was just really brief. I didn't stick with it. But has anyone done that and found it helpful? And if so, how do you do that?
Not me, but my mom.
Yeah.
They were missionaries on board a ship, and my dad left his profession of being a doctor, and they went to live by faith for 3 years with three girls, and they didn't have anything, and my mom reported everything that they needed, little bitty.
Wow.
Like, I really want a coffee maker. And then the next day or the next week, somebody provided that for her, or things like that. She wrote. And I think she kept the discipline. I
didn't,
but she did.
And she still reads that to this day. I know.
Like she goes back and reads it?
Huh?
She goes back and reads it? Sorry. Wow. That's impressive.
And they're still living by faith up to today. My dad's a chaplain for the Catholic Church in
hospice.
Oh. You had one?
I do. I started journaling in general, not prayer specific, but just thoughts or encounters or anything like that. And I noticed you can look back on that and see like like this might have been a problem, now it's a problem, it might be a continued problem. So you can like kind of focus on where to put your prayer.
Hmm.
Or